The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show here on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 99.9 and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, here we go, folks. Welcome to lunchtime. Good afternoon, one and all. Here I am. It's Juan. It's the John DePietro Show weekdays. We start at 11. We go till 2. It's AM 1380, 99.9 FM. You can always listen online. Go to DePietro.com. Check out the new website, DePietro.com. This portion of the program is bright. And, folks, you can email me. It's John at DePietro.com. No eyes. John at DePietro.com. But everything begins and ends with the website. It has all the information that you need. This part of the program, you know, I just wanted to mention, I just received an email, and I love when I get this, from Al that says, John, I heard you mention an appliance repair. I have an appliance that needs to be repaired. Could you repeat that phone number? Folks, if you ever hear of an advertiser and you say, you know, I didn't catch the phone number, absolutely feel free to contact me. It's Ryan's Appliance Repair, 401-710-7096. Repairs on all makes and models of appliances. Ryan's Appliance Repair, 401-710-7096. This portion of Political Monday is brought to you by Propane Plus. For all your propane needs, contact Tim Johnson at Propane Plus. Two locations, Rehoboth, East Greenwich, Propane Plus, 401-885-4209, 401-885-4209, Propane Plus. They want to be your propane provider. Propane Plus. Underground tanks, full service, automatic delivery, extensive selection of tanks, all propane appliances, satellite tank monitoring, discounts for builders, installation and service. Call Propane Plus today at 401-885-4209. Well, folks, let's bring him on. He is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. And it is, we want to say good afternoon to the one and only Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Justin, before we get into a little more of local type politics, I'd like your thoughts on, I think it's something that it just really highlights where the Democrat Party is today, where politics are today. You know, everyone talks about how, you know, the divisive the president is. But look at what happened just the couple of hours after, you know, the strike against someone who was without question a murderer. Basically, it was like a terrorist wearing a uniform. But number one, on a larger scale, Elizabeth Warren first came out, Senator Warren first came out and referred to him as a murderer. And then from pressure of the left, they made her backtrack. And she actually started to retract it and then just started attacking President Trump. But, you know, our Washington delegation of Senator Reid, Senator Whitehouse, Congressman Cicilline, Congressman Langevin, it's just become so predictable now that they just fall in line and they just all start to immediately kind of, it just seems like it's all talking points put out from the party, and especially someone like a Senator Reid who has a military background, who, you know, deals with, he knows Secretary of State Pompeo. I just find that the four of them, they're all seemingly interchangeable now. And I don't see the statesmen. I don't see the leaders. I find a delegation that and a party that's become, you know, it doesn't also get enough talked about, Justin. But I think what you saw happen in New Jersey, where that congressman that did not want to vote in favor of impeachment had to leave the Democrat Party in order to do it. It is, as much as they talk about divisiveness and unity, I mean, we've seen this now between you can't be pro-life and be a Democrat, and now you can't in any way seemingly support our military or not be in lockstep with the anti-Trump rhetoric, or you basically are told to leave the party.
Well, you raise good comparisons with the pro-life issue in the New Jersey congressman who switched parties. Because the big problem here is every party, it's in every party's interest when things go badly for the other people of the other party, elected officials of the other party. The question is whether how far you take that and who you're rooting for when things are going wrong. And the problem I think the Democrats have, especially on these sorts of international issues, is that their interest in having the president do poorly and fail is in line more with their approach to international policy. So the big line from Cicilline and all of them, actually, I think, as you say, talking points, was that they fear escalation. And I think that's a fundamental misunderstanding of President Trump's approach and, frankly, the Republican approach, although Republicans have had a hard time getting elected officials to actually answer to follow these rules when they get there. But the Democrats, they want the international, quote, community. So when there's violence, they say, okay, well, let's stop the violence so we can all get back to talking. And this has always put leverage in the hands of dictators. All they have to do is act up and they get something. The most famous of this is President Obama with the pallets of cash to Iran. Or you can look also at Yasser Arafat from the Palestinian organization getting the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, with the dictators, if they'll stay quiet, that's peaceful, and they'll get prizes and rewards. I think what we see with the president is he is willing to do a little bit of back and forth with Iran. You strike us, you will do this. You invade our embassy, we'll do this. But fundamentally, at the end of the day, he's going to, I think what you'll see is if the cost of being there gets too high, he'll just say, okay, have your Middle East and we'll go do our thing with our fracking. We don't need your oil anymore. And I think that's what's really terrifying to not only the dictators, but also the internationalists in the Democrat Party. So they're in a tough position now because the president is actually following through on what many on the conservative side had wanted as an approach to international affairs. And so if that goes well, not only is it bad for them in a party position, it's bad for their ideology as well. And I think that's a lot of why we're seeing this kind of lockstep and this reaction, not as much from our own delegation, to some extent surprisingly, because White House and Cicilline have been so far left on so many issues, but from the media and the Democrats and the left generally, almost a promotion of this general who was this Iranian general who was killed as some sort of hero or just somebody who isn't even a bad guy. So I guess you take the good news where you can get it. At least our delegation acknowledged that he was a terrible person and shouldn't be more.
Justin, on another note, and this just happened last night, but I am curious. We're not going to spend a lot of time because I think it's actually foolishness. And I think he certainly won't come on my program. But what is your thought that we're hearing that former Rhode Island Governor Link Chafee, former senator and governor, now resident of Wyoming, moved there for tax purposes? What is your thought on news that he would like to seek the nomination? And I don't think he's going to get it, but he's joined the Libertarian Party and is seeking the nomination to run for president with the Libertarian Party.
Well, my first thought is I'm starting to think he's some talk radio host's plant. You know, like Howard Stern had people calling into radio stations or going on TV shows and going, Baba Booey, Baba Booey. It's almost like Link Chafee is out there as a character on some radio skit. I'm going to run for president in this party. Now I'm going to run in this party. It should be a field day for Saturday Night Live or somebody like that. But my second thought is that he's running out of parties to run with.
I agree with that. I also, though, don't think that it warrants enough. It's kind of, initially it was when he did, but he's so underwhelming and a non-factor. I think it's, you know, a question I would like to see. I mean, I have a poll question right now on just on my Facebook page. Would you support him? I'd like your thought. I thought if he was on the ballot, I don't think he gets 5% in Rhode Island. I mean, he's running because he can run and wants to run and is seeking some way. He is a pacifist. He's always been one. He likes to point to his vote against the Iraq War. But as I've said, I think he would vote against any war. But what's frightening to me is for four years, he was the governor of the state. And now he's just this guy floating around trying to, you know, now he wants to run for president as a libertarian. But as you know, he's never going to make the state, like, he's not going to be included in any debate. Maybe he feels this will give him more of a platform. It's just, I don't know what to make of it anymore. He's just, I don't even find, everyone just kind of dismisses him. But that was 4 years that we, you know, that he was in charge. And actually, you go back to 2008, when he did endorse President Obama instead of Hillary Clinton. He did it the day that John McCain was coming to Rhode Island. At the time, that was seen significant because he had been in the Senate and he had been a Republican. Then he left there and then eventually became a Democrat. But it's, I don't know, it's another reminder. I don't think that, I'm not saying it hurts Rhode Island because now he's Wyoming's problem, but I just find he's just kind of now like floating around. Like, I don't know what he's doing out there.
Yeah, I think it's the relevance for Rhode Island is it should be an opportunity for some soul searching. We should be asking ourselves, because he's not doing anything, you know, it's not surprising. It's not like Governor Carcieri is out there doing something like this.
Correct.
This is Link Chafee, and this is, we've always kind of known this was Link Chafee, and yet we elected him to the Senate, we elected him to the governor's office,
yeah.
And we should really ask ourselves, how did we do that?
Yes.
Is this an indication, the fact that somebody like that could take these high positions in Rhode Island, is that an indication that we really have to reevaluate how we approach politics in the state? And I think the only answer is yes. I mean, it wasn't an accident that we elected him multiple times.
Yeah, I still maintain, I think a big part of it was that, you know, people just saw the name, and I think there was enough people. It was such a fluky election 2010 when he won with the 36%, and in many ways, Ken Block kind of got him elected, because if Ken Block had not been running, I think that would have been John Robitaille. Chafee announced he was always right around 36-38%. He never hit 40, and he never went below right around 35 or 36. So, you know, that was the beginning of our problems with these third parties. But let's talk about something more modern day, and that is the Providence Journal. I thought this was interesting. They kind of laid out the General Assembly in the new year, and they're going to be in session tomorrow, and exactly, you know, where they stand with priorities. And I want to touch on some of the issues, and they touched on them from education to guns, which I'm going to touch on. I don't know why that is a priority, but the conservative Republican agenda, I notice that line, budget and taxes, business lobby. One of the first things, Justin Katz, I want to ask you about is, you know, most states right now have surpluses. Massachusetts has a massive surplus. Other states have surpluses. Rhode Island, Governor Raimondo says, well, we need more money because we're already entering the year with a budget deficit of $200 million projected now. Although I just starting to question how good they are and effective as far as budgeting. But New York State, I think I saw Cuomo, they have a $6 billion projected deficit. But what is your first reaction with Raimondo has all these ideas, but at the same time, it's almost like ignoring the fact that there's already a projected $200 million budget. Deficit.
I think you put your finger on one of the problems is we don't grow as a state, and that's a choice. The policies of the people we elect, particularly Governor Raimondo with her approach to top-down economic development, we don't grow economically. We're constantly struggling. We're going to constantly be in deficit, and it points to a need for a real kind of reset and rethinking of our priorities and how the world works. So this is when you're not willing to do that reset, this is what you get. You get that, well, let's make some adjustments. Let's you know, we'll try to find some new ways to increase fees here. We'll do some internet taxes here and try to legalize pot so we can get some cash from that over here. Have some sports gambling on your cell phone app. And that's what we get. It's a get by kind of a budgeting approach. And so a lot of the priorities they talk about end up having these, you know, this feel of, that might be nice from a certain perspective, say free college for everybody or free K, but the money's just not there. And I that's why we have these struggles every year. We're just not willing to reassess. And a lot of it's all I thought that was an excellent article of summary of, I think for people who don't necessarily follow things as closely as we do, that Providence Journal article really laid out a lot of the differences between the players in the state, although I question how many people who don't follow it as closely as you and I would actually read that whole thing. But those the contrast of the special interests and the likelihood of their getting what they want, I think is indicative of how stuck the state is. Nothing in that list of issues that the Providence Journal, Kathy Gregg, and Patrick Anderson put forward really makes you think, okay, this would put us on a better footing. It's all dealing with problems and either supporting, pushing, or pushing back on the priorities of interest groups, which is not a healthy place for a government to be. And, you know, going back, when those are the decisions your elected officials are making, you can see why somebody like Link Chafee gets in there, because it feels like nobody's got any vision for anything anyway.
No, it does not in any way. And let's just start a couple of the categories. One is education. And what is your thought on, here you have a situation that, I mean, it's been highly demonstrated how much better Massachusetts outperforms Rhode Island with just as far as education, one of the tops in the country. Rhode Island certainly spends enough per pupil. Rhode Island teachers are very, very well compensated. But what do you have? Bob Walsh, NEA. And what does he say? The state needs to put more money into education and almost start saying, well, you know, teacher salaries are not competitive with Massachusetts. And so we may start losing teachers to Massachusetts and Connecticut. Now, that is absolute foolishness. And if somebody wants to go and work in those school systems, then so be it. But this is another example. I mean, they give him so much power and it's... It is pathetic that the problem with the schools is not lack of funding. It's where the money goes. It's these expensive programs with the teachers' pensions and the amount of sick days and the free health care and all of that money that goes in. And then you still don't get the results and the amount per pupil. Boy, it is just a broken record, Justin Katz, where the union, they're saying, well, you know, we don't want the communities to have to do it, but the state needs to pump more money into education. What people need to understand is there's never going to be enough money, no matter how much. If you gave them a check for $1 billion, they'd want $2 billion. If it was $2 billion, they'd want $4 billion. There will never be. That is a money drain that they continue, money hole, to just flush money down.
Absolutely. And it makes me think, I think a few months ago on your program, I mentioned how it's fun watching Progressive Senator Sam Bell talk, because he'll really just say anything that he thinks might advance his position, no matter how laughable it is. And I think in this article, Bob Walsh kind of took some of that mantle and ran with it. I mean, the idea that Rhode Island teachers are saying, it's not even worth working here, I'm going to go to another state, it's ridiculous. And also the idea that he's saying we need to shift. It wasn't just that we need more money from the state. He's saying, well, we need to shift the funding toward the state so it's not so much on the local taxpayers. Nobody in their right mind should believe that the unions are going to start, if the state picks up more of the tab, the unions are going to say, oh, okay, great, now there's room for tax cuts at the local level. No, they'll keep pushing there,
yep.
And they'll keep trying to get the state money. It's always just a game to get more money. But I think education's an excellent example of what I meant when I said nobody has a vision, or if they do, we all know it's impossible. So the House Minority Leader Blake Filippi mentioned as their priority more of a, and also my boss Mike Stenhouse from the Center for Freedom and Prosperity, the priority of having school choice, where parents can actually take some of the money that's set aside for their children and find a school elsewhere, or other forms, charter schools or going across district lines. That's something that could really change the whole dynamic of education for the better and provide relief for students whose schools are failing right now. But we all know it's a dead end.
Yep.
You know, you might, at best, every now and then, what you can get is if you rally enough people and create enough pressure, you get another $500,000 or $1 million for the state's tax credit scholarship program, which is great.
Yep.
But that's not revolutionary.
No.
Instead, we get Bob Wall saying, oh, well, let's have more money from the state, and you get the Senate talking about how they've done all this work to look at the funding formula and it might shift things around a little bit. And none of it should have any, should produce any hope for anybody. And it's in line at this moment with the failure so far of the state to really articulate a new vision for Providence upon taking over. As we've discussed before, we're going to come in and maybe we'll manage it a little bit better. And maybe we'll have some powers that the district didn't have before. Well, maybe, but maybe not. But that's still not a It's not a here's what we're going to be doing completely differently to help turn us around now. And that is really desperate in education in Rhode Island. But I think the same sort of feeling applies to every other issue.
You know, something that, and again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. We speak with Justin Katz. It's Political Monday, managing at OceanStateCurrent.com. You know, Justin, you just said something. And here's something that, unfortunately, we don't, other than Blake Filippi and Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, we don't have anyone that's truly in a position of power like Governor Raimondo or even McKee or anyone like that that will really call it as, and you mentioned the word game. And the problem is, it is a game to them. Their game that people need to understand is about always trying to get more money and hire more people. It's about jobs and money. And what I can't stand is when people say, well, you know, I don't fault them. They're just doing their job. That job of doing that should be eliminated. The schools should be about education. If Rhode Island really wanted to improve, there are states that do not allow and outlaw collective bargaining with teachers' unions and public sector unions. Those are people that are serious about improvement. As long as this game remains in place, I spoke with a Cranston teacher 2 weeks ago that said this was someone, he used to make money teaching summer school, and there's no money, so they got rid of the summer school programs, and now they just push the kids forward. What does that tell you? And we know Cranston, there's plenty of money, but it's because of the expensive packages where so much of the budget goes towards retired teachers and their health care plans and their pensions, and they get raises and blah, 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 that it's just a black hole. But that is part of the problem. There shouldn't be this business of, you know, he's just doing his job and negotiating for his members. I don't hear anyone raise the fact that Rhode Island should outlaw collective bargaining. We should not have collective bargaining for organized labor. It is obviously not for public sector unions. It certainly has not served the state well. And you see countless examples where the state really has become, let's call it what it is, for those with means. You send your child to either, say, like a Moses Brown or some of the schools on the east side, or you send your child to a Mount St. Charles or a Bishop Hendricken or a LaSalle. And then those that don't, they then try to move into certain communities like a Barrington or East Greenwich that have good school systems. And then otherwise, you try to get your child into a charter school. But basically, you just have the majority of the students are stuck in failing public schools. And I'll give you the last word, because then I do want to touch on some of the other items.
I think the answer to the people who say, well, you know, he's Bob Walsh and the union heads are just doing their job. Well, that's well and good if they're limited to their job. But they're also political kingmakers, and they spend a lot of money on politics.
That's
right. This is the whole problem, public sector unionization. It's you're on both sides of the negotiating table. You can use, it's almost like they should have to pick one. You can either unionize and negotiate collectively, or you can vote and participate in a political process. One or the other, because otherwise you end up with doing, I'm just doing my job is means, you know, you're just trying to be the biggest gangster on the block.
Yeah.
That Jimmy Hoffa was just doing his job, or any mobster just doing their job. It's just their role to support their family and their business. Yeah, to some extent, but there's not only is there a moral line where at some point you wonder how they look themselves in a mirror, but there's also the role for the rest of us in limiting the scope with which in which they can do that job.
Yep.
You can't go around just having every advantage and just saying, oh, I'm just doing my job. Well, no, I think the rest of us have to take some responsibility on putting boundaries on that.
That's right. Folks, good afternoon again. It's John DePietro speaking with Justin Katz. Now, I want to touch on, and just, you're exactly right about Kingmaker, because after pension reform, there were two Democrat lawmakers that voted in favor of pension reform. Well, there were several, but two that just come to mind were Doug Jablonski in Warren, Bristol, and David Caprio was the rep down in Narragansett. And so what did the unions do? Bob Walsh ran. Teresa Tanzi and someone else, the unions, they got someone, and they took the both of them out in Democrat primaries to penalize them for voting against pension reform. So it's real. And other people, they make examples out of people, and they do bully. I also am intrigued by organized labor, progressive agenda. And what do they talk about? Raising the minimum wage tops the agenda of public groups. Of course, they love to do that. The unions love that because then the living wage for the union goes up. Every time you raise the minimum wage, that's an automatic raise for all union members. But you have this business of, like, George Nee again, who people have no idea how much power he has up there and controls people, Rhode Island AFL-CIO, who says, right now, we're so far behind Massachusetts with people working 40 hours and not making enough. You know, I think we've talked about this. That is such a misnomer. The minimum wage is not designed to try to attract workers to work in another state. It's not about that. It is what it is. Raising the minimum wage is not business friendly. They also want to, you know, enact these taxes on businesses. But this is the power of these groups together, of which I just will never understand, where you have, you know, the Women's Caucus is in line and united, just as an example, with like the Warwick Firefighters or the Cranston Firefighters that have no female members and are like, you know, all of these allegations of harassment. But they're united with just, it basically comes down to me, just try to gouge the public and businesses as much as possible. This business of, you know, we need to stay competitive with that. We're nowhere near competitive. Trying to raise the minimum wage and then putting extra taxes. How about the tax businesses for having employees enrolled in state Medicaid? If enacted, Rhode Island would be the only state in the country with such a tax. Justin Katz, what people need to understand is these policies put forth by like a George Nee and the progressives, they are completely hurting the public and businesses. In no way would that benefit business in any way.
Yeah, I thought that line from George Nee was hilarious about the, well, our workers here are making $90 less a week than minimum wage workers in Massachusetts, and we're not competitive. In the same article that Bob Walsh is saying, well, teachers are going to go across the border if we don't pay them well enough. To my knowledge, businesses are not having a ton of trouble finding employees in Rhode Island.
No.
If they were, they would have to raise their rates in order to stay in business. That's how it's supposed to work. It's how a market works. But it's just as if they can say anything because nobody's really paying attention to
the
details that they put forward. I think you put your finger on something important, and it caught me too, that the header here was union/progressive. Like that's the category.
Yeah.
And there's no reason it ought to be the category. I mean, there's no reason a construction worker out on the highway ought to be backing progressive causes. But what's happened in recent years is sort of the veil has fallen off. And as I've said before, the labor services is sort of how these groups make their money, usually taking it from taxpayers. That's how they make their money, but it's not their reason for existing. Their reason for existing is the progressive causes. That's what they're organized to do. The union services are really just sort of their flavoring and how they get money. And then this was proven some years ago at a Netroots Nation event here that, you know, Pat Crowley and the other, I think Bob Walsh was on a panel and George Nee too. So Netroots is a big progressive conference that I don't know if they're still doing it, but that went on for a number of years. And when it came to Rhode Island, of course, our unions were front and central. And they were their theme, Pat Crowley and the other local union reps, was all about how everything is one. They see the progressive cause as one big union. And that was the method they touted, how they used that method to fight Governor Kercheria at the time. And that's what they do. And there's no reason. Anytime you see a social issue, whether it's same-sex marriage or abortion, somewhere in there is funding from Rhode Island National Education Association. There's no reason a teacher's union should, in theory, be funding far-left social causes. But that's what they do. That's why they're there. And all of this points right back to that, from the minimum wages to increasing welfare to increasing taxes. It's get more money and implement progressive policies.
Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. Speak with Justin Katz, managing editor, OceanStateCurrent.com. Our segment is Political Monday. Now, Justin, the next category, listen, this to me, this shouldn't even be a priority. There shouldn't be any hearings. I don't care what he says. We don't have a gun problem in this state. And what do they start with? Two dead, two injured in Westerly the week before Christmas. So one of the categories they have, guns. The events last month fueled a renewed fight for common sense gun laws. This is not a problem in Rhode Island. It's not. And that is true. You know, there were two dead and two injured in Westerly. And you know what else happened on Christmas Day? It was a former reporter for the Providence Journal. She went up onto the parking garage of Northeastern, and she pushed two of her young children to death, and then she herself leapt. So that's three deaths compared to one in Westerly. If they want to focus on mental illness, of which we still spend a lot of money on, that's one thing. But they're going to spend all this money, and you even had like that rep, Justin Caldwell, saying, well, you know, we have to make this a priority. And Governor Raimondo, we need tighter gun laws. We don't have a gun problem in this state. There are parts of the South. It's far more readily, easily, and available to obtain a firearm. The shootings that we're hearing about, if in some way it needs to be tightened, such as there was a story that the town where you live or some kind of checks and balances of exactly who's getting a weapon. But to me, this is one of those, when Governor Raimondo talks about gun legislation, I just view that as she's not dealing with a Rhode Island problem. She's trying to pad her resume for further office. I don't like when I see that they're going to have to spend all this time up at the State House with this gun safety and school shootings and kids are afraid. Now, it's a bunch of nonsense. I have a junior in high school, you know, and I'll ask her and none of her friends. They don't ever talk about school shootings. They don't hear about that stuff. They don't know a lot of kids that have guns. There are certain parts of the country, you know, the kids go shooting every weekend, or when they turn 18, they go out and buy a weapon. We don't have that type of culture in here. This to me is just more talk of the progressives following a national agenda.
It is, and I think that's also evident in more than any other issue in this article. You get a sense from the gun control commentary from the reporters that it's more of an advocacy thing for the Providence Journal than simply reporting it. It's let's elevate this to the level of other issues that you and I would agree are more serious for Rhode Island right now, education and so on. Let's elevate this issue that really isn't that big a deal, either politically or as a matter of public safety, to the level that the rest are. And I think you see that in the fact that Nick Mattiello, the Speaker of the House, was willing to be entirely contrarian on this and essentially say, no, I'm not, I don't think we're going to see any gun control stuff. And he had a good quote in there. He said, I have all the confidence in the world in our law-abiding Rhode Islanders. And that's an important point on the gun issue that it's not made often enough. At the end of the day, the progressives with their causes are about not trusting people. And so what they do is they'll take a story like the Westerly story where somebody used guns wrongly, and they'll focus on the ways that person found to go around the law, you know, going to another town to purchase the gun, that sort of thing. And then the advocates go around and try to clamp down on all those ways of evading the law. And what they end up doing is just getting in the way of people who are going to follow the law, not the people who are going to not follow the law. And so it becomes it just gums up the works, restricts people's rights, and has no effect. As you point out with the tragic story of the mom who killed her children and committed suicide, there are ways to do these things without a gun. A gun is just a tool. And if you stop that flow, then you'll see a rise of machetes, like we saw in New York State.
That's right.
The anti-Semitic attack. You see in Europe and in England all the time are knife attacks, car attacks. It's kind of a waste of our time as a political organization, I think. And it's also just a way to change the sense of citizenship The feeling that, ooh, you are not good, you're dangerous, and we, the good people at the State House, have to figure out how to control you.
Yeah.
That's a dangerous message to be sending to people.
I agree with that. And also, you know, when you speak of knives, you had that very high-profile murder by that guy that never should have been let out of prison on Federal Hill, who was a member of Latin Kings. And so that's, you know, that was a stabbing at a hookah lounge on Federal Hill. Then he went on the run. Then they finally caught him in Texas. But so that's four deaths. If they truly wanted to attack this problem in Westerly, I'd like to see, I don't know what the provisions are that these, the people that worked at that facility where this man that apparently, that then killed himself with the shooter, but I think there should be more information of when you are relaying, you know, apparently he was very upset that they were telling him that he wasn't supposed to be smoking and he was smoking in his room. And I think, you know, they're not doing anything to address. That would be a frightening situation if you are supposed to be enforcing the law and enforcing just, excuse me, like more the rules and guidelines of a facility. And that would come in handy to know exactly who you're dealing with, because, you know, he didn't, you know, it wasn't a robbery. He was upset with the people he works with. He thought that perhaps they were going to evict him. I'd like to see more of an effort made to try to provide tools that if you are in a situation like that, that you have the right to either, that's a red flag, or find out or put that person a notice, or I don't know enough about it, but to suddenly just start saying, well, see, there you go, we need tighter gun laws, that's not going to solve the problem, because this, if you take away the gun, that man may have entered the lobby with a knife or a machete. It's more of, what do you do when you have a problem individual? Now, a couple of the other items that are, you know, the business lobby, they mentioned that. The Greater Providence Chamber of Commerce is heading into the session long list of anticipated bills, including legislation on marijuana, unless employers are guaranteed the right. Now, I'm not a big fan of the Greater Providence Chamber of Commerce. I know Lori White. I've met her. I just don't think she's been effective. I know in other states, I think their business lobby is far stronger and far more outspoken. I'm kind of thrown that, like, that's their priority is marijuana. How is that the priority if Massachusetts has it and their businesses and economy are thriving? I don't, you know, if it's a sense of priorities, I still think you have to make it easier for people to do business and not all these nickel and dime fees and taxes and this other foolishness that they throw on people. And now they're going to put all this effort into, you know, marijuana. And then now, of course, then they get dragged in on business services and cleaning. I don't know. I don't see that should be the priority. But again, I'm not part of the Providence Chamber of Commerce.
What struck me about that section of the article was, for a long time, it's been hard to see the Chamber of Commerce as sort of a right in Rhode Island as a right-leaning organization, because they've been supporting sort of progressive economics of the governor and so on. And the progressives, I think, are coming on so strong that these organizations, I would rather go along and get along with the less progressive but still pretty left-wing establishment in Rhode Island. I think they're starting to have to push back a little bit to maintain face, but some of it just seems like looking for issues that they're willing to work on rather than addressing, as you say, the fundamental problems of our economic structure and the way we do taxes and regulations in the state. And if the chamber were going to be very effective, I mean, I've said frequently that the way what they ought to be doing is representing their constituents to the government and going to politicians and saying, here's what our constituents want, and we're going to push for this, sort of like the unions do, right? We're going to fight for this, and if you don't do anything for us, we'll take you out. Instead, what has happened in Rhode Island with our kind of backroom, backslapping deals is these groups are sort of selected by government to be the representatives to their constituencies. So they'll go out and they'll say, okay, here's what we were able to get you. Here's what the speaker and the governor want to do. So here's why you ought to do it. I think that's more the, everything flows the other way. And it's an indication, again, of how kind of sick our civic society is in an illness way, not a mental illness way. Although maybe that too. But it's good in some ways to see them seeming a little bit more conservative, but in other ways it highlights how far gone they are. And they're not really advocating for what their constituencies are after. And
yeah.
We hopefully will start to see groups crop up to answer that gap, because it is a gap in demand. Like we recently emerging the Gatsby Business Network as a sort of an alternative to the chambers, because they're not answering their constituency's call. They're playing the insider game. They're getting their names in the newspaper, and it's not really what they're supposed to be about.
It's really not. And I also just want to get your thought on, you can always tell when, to me, our local officials get nervous about something that they can't control, because, they are all up in arms about the census. And the reason is, to me, is because they can't manipulate the census. They'd like to try to manipulate the census. Certainly leads me to believe they know how to manipulate our elections. But, they are up in arms about the census, and we could lose a seat. And what people really need to understand, the way I understand it, is if we lose a congressional seat, I believe I heard or read that could translate to a loss of $1 billion in funding. So they are up in arms about the census, and we have to do something and raise awareness. And you can always tell to me, Justin, when it's like when something is truly on the burner, right? When something is a priority, and there are things that should be a priority, that's when the political people really kick into action, right? It's not, there was no big press conference when the John Hopkins thing came out or that type of thing. But the thought that they could be losing federal money, so therefore we have to do something about the census. Not we need to change the policies that more people would want to work and live here. It's all about the purse strings could be shut off. They are having a conniption over the potential of the census.
Yeah, that's the shame of it. Something like a census is very valuable to allow us to know what's going on, make good decisions. The demographics, all of that. I am supportive of the federal government spending some resources to produce that data so that we can make better decisions. But that's not how the politicians look at it at all. It's as you say, this will trigger a loss of a congressional seat, and it will trigger a loss of revenue. And rather than they focus on that money, and rather than focusing on the policies, and what that ends up doing is creating policies that are really out of whack. Last week, I put up interactive maps from the U.S. Census releases estimates of population change and also what's changing the population. So, for example, births versus deaths, international migration, domestic migration, people moving from one state to another. And what you see in Rhode Island and have seen for a long time is we're really down on domestic migration. People leaving, Rhode Islanders leaving and going to other states. And you see that in a handful of states. But what you also see in Rhode Island is we're really up in international migration. So you get the impression that the policies they're chasing, they don't want to fix the things that will keep Rhode Islanders here. I mean, New Hampshire is positive, and New Hampshire and Maine are the only New England states that are positive for domestic. Meaning people are moving from other states to those states.
Right.
Rather than change Rhode Island so that people move from Connecticut and Massachusetts or Texas or anywhere and come here and do their thing and build their lives in Rhode Island, rather than do that, we focus on other policies. And New York's a little ahead of us with things like licenses for illegal immigrants, which the ACLU is trying to get around here too. These policies, welfare policies, those sorts of things attract international migrants, which end up costing more because they're more likely to need welfare services and other government services. And they end up costing more, but they keep our census numbers up. And so maybe we won't lose that $1 billion. So you end up with this, it's almost like a downward spiral where again, there's no vision to try to say, okay, we're doing something wrong, let's fix this. Instead, it's, oh, let's get by. We just need another few thousand people to come here from another country, and then we can cancel out the people who are leaving for other states, and we can keep our congressional seats and that $1 billion. It's really the incentives put you in completely the wrong direction on your decision making.
Yeah, and just, I don't want to backtrack to it too much, but even the knee comment of like, well, you know, if you work minimum wage in Massachusetts, you make so much more. No one mentions the fact that obviously then that should be an advantage to Rhode Island businesses, that if you move your business over the line to Rhode Island, then you don't have to pay your workers so much in minimum wage. But that goes by the wayside. I want to just rattle off some numbers to you. And this was in, speaking of the census, though, in this morning's Providence Journal. Now, follow the numbers here. In 2017, registered voters now. Now, Justin, here we are, 2019. The lawsuit of the Providence Journal against Secretary of State Gorbea's office now, over a year old. I don't know. I'm going to try to find out at some point this week where that stands. I'm going to imagine the Gorbea people are going to continue to try to still delay it. But in 2017, there were 760, I'm going to round it off, 769,000 people on the voter rolls in 2017. In December 2018, there's 793,000. So in 1 year, they added, in doing the math, that's about 24,000 voters. The end of this year, they knocked the number from 793 down to 783. So they reduced it by 10, but it's still 14,000 over where it was in 2017. And why these numbers are important is because, according to the census, there were only 782,000 citizens old enough that could actually vote in Rhode Island. So that was the census number of 782. Gorbea has gotten it close to 783, but according to the census, the real number of registered voters is still 532,000, which still puts Rhode Island 255,000 voters over what should be the voter roll. I don't know how you attack or solve anything when you still have those types of discrepancies.
Well, it certainly contributes to the sense of hopelessness that nothing's going to change. Even just the numbers, as you say, it seems to fluctuate. Oh, what looks reasonable? Well, maybe 783,000 looks reasonable, so we'll get it down to that. And you know, it goes to the whole process and how you can't really have confidence in it. You get these large numbers of people registered to vote. To the extent that they're actual people, you do have to wonder how many of them are making informed decisions. But even beyond that, you have to wonder how many really aren't or shouldn't be eligible to vote. And then you add that to the increasing trend of using early voting, mail ballots, campaigns hiring people to go door to door and actually collect ballots from people. And essentially, it becomes a vote mill, which is, these are big discrepancies. I'm glad the Providence Journal has stayed on that, because it's a story they get a little bit of heat for, because there's some question of, you know, the census is an estimate and so on. But it is something that Rhode Islanders should demand a bit more transparency and accountability. And that includes letting people see the birthdays of voters so that they can check it. Because one of the ways you get your number to grow is by not taking people off who have died. And I don't think, I'm not confident that we have a good handle on the whether these are people who are still voting somehow.
Oh, yeah. One, I don't know if you caught Kim Kalunian's end of year interview with Governor Raimondo. I'm going to probably play it either next hour or tomorrow. But Governor Raimondo's entire demeanor in the interview changed when Kim Kalunian brought up that Morning Consult poll that has her as the least popular governor with 36% approval rating. And what's interesting to me is Governor Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, The Morning Consult poll basically mirrors polls in Massachusetts. Now, for whatever reason, Brown University stopped doing their polling that shows, you know, popularity. I don't know why they got away from that. They did it for many years. But Governor Mundo's entire demeanor changed. She starts talking about she doesn't believe the poll, and she got 53% of the vote, and she got a mandate, and everyone's behind her. And I'm telling you, Justin, I'm going to find out where things stand with this journal lawsuit about Gorbea, because I'd also like to know if other media venues have filed a friend of the court, which you can file, that shows that you also support this. Because I am still under the belief, if there's one state that we should not take their word that, oh, you know, everything's on the up and up. You know, if there's one state with government should be trust but verify, it should be Rhode Island. And what Gorbea has done by hiding this information is she's taken out the element of verify. It's all just has to go on trust. And it is a reoccurring theme that I would not put it past them that they manipulated the numbers in that last election.
I have to agree with that. And the important thing to remember is you don't manipulate. It's not one trick that gets them the win. You know, it's not like a movie where somebody cheats on the lottery and what they do is they have the right ball pop up and you win. It's not like that. It's little by little. You suppress the number of people who are taken off the rolls. You create the number of sort of phantom ballots that are out there that can be cast but aren't people that aren't eligible. You increase the amount that people go out and collect votes and are able to do that through mail ballots and early voting. You increase the amount of people who are on the public payroll. You increase the number of people who have some special deal involved, the weight of the unions. You increase all of those little by little. And at some point, through all of these mechanisms, and even, you know, the legislative grants where the leaders of the chambers can give out money for their constituents, that eventually you rig the system. And I think that's where we are in Rhode Island right now.
Oh, yeah.
The disparity between the governor's election numbers and her approval numbers is a good indication of that. I mean, we're at the point where we're not electing the people who are truly representative.
No, and it doesn't, you know, it just doesn't add up. Someone with 36% approval rating doesn't get 53%. So, folks, he is the managing editor at OceanStateCurrent.com, and it's a new year, and we always look forward to talking to him. He's Justin Cass. Justin, great job. We'll talk to you again.
Thank you, John. I'll talk to you next week.
All right.